This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chwee Lin. And if you've been listening on Fridays at 3 for the last 40-odd weeks, you would have heard my guest today, PJ Tham, a research associate at the Centre for Global History at the University of Oxford. And he's live in the studio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. After a whole year, it's nice to finally be here physically.
Exactly. So this project took place because of Lee Kuan Yew's passing last year. And we spoke to you in the studio about his legacy at the time, and since then you've developed that interview into this whole 50 episode series on the history of Singapore. Feedback has been coming through Facebook, email, your website. What has the reception been like?
Oh, fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. I think people love to learn more about history. People want to know a lot more about our shared past, about our heritage, about how we are the way we are today. So it's been really good. And of course, I think for Singaporeans, there's also this element of getting to know things which have been buried by various governments, Singapore, Malaysia and Britain, for a long time. So there's this act of uncovering, which is also very cathartic for a lot of people, I think.
We're continuing that process of feedback right now, actually. If you've got any questions or any opinions, stories, anything at all, give us a call. That number is 03-7710-9000. You can also text us at 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. While you're talking about that sort of Singaporean catharsis that happens, are the listeners primarily writing to you from Singapore?
Yes, overwhelmingly from Singapore. I would say the vast majority, 60-70%. But I also get a lot of listeners from Malaysia, from the UK, from the USA, and India. Those are actually my top five. And then I actually get one or two listeners from different countries all over the world. I have a loyal listener in Qatar every week. One guy in Qatar downloads my podcast. I don't know who he is, but I really appreciate his support. You know, Vietnam, Taiwan, Russia. There's one guy in Russia, one man or woman, I don't know. So I'm getting listeners from all over the world. I think over 100 different countries, according to SoundCloud.
And one thing that came to mind is that the public perception of Singapore, modern Singapore, mm-hmm. is very favorable indeed. We don't deal with, I guess, the muck that history brings up. But in terms of government efficiency, education, cleanliness, Singapore always ranks really high up there. But you say there are a lot of myths about the public image. What are some of these misconceptions, speaking from the inside?
Oh, wow, there's a lot to unpack there, and we don't have much time. I think that, you know, unlike Malaysia, we don't really have an independent media. You know, you guys are much, your media is much more independent. So a lot of facts about Singapore simply are not propagated, simply are not publicized, right? And so it's harder to know the truth about Singapore unless you live in Singapore, unless you're researching on Singapore. So I guess the most common one is Singapore is rich. And I think there's definitely an element there. Singapore itself is rich, but Singaporeans, many Singaporeans are poor. Independent estimates of Singapore show that between 25-33% of Singaporeans live under the poverty line. They live in poverty, depending on how you measure poverty. You know, so there is a major issue there. Singapore has extremely high wealth inequality and income inequality. So you don't see it, though, because the media doesn't report on it, but also because we all live in high-rise HDB government housing flats. And so we only see the outside, which is nicely kept clean and well decorated. But if you go to inside many of these flats, you know, they look very much like slums. There is genuine poverty in Singapore. And, you know, speaking of HDB, the government owns 80% of the land, so it is able to assert a level of control in Singapore that many other governments, nearly every other government, would envy. So it is able to fix and determine outcomes and how we perceive a lot of these outcomes in a way that is very much invisible unless you know what to look for.
We have Robert on the line now. Good afternoon, Robert.
Student, hi, Dr. Tham.
Hi, Robert.
Yeah, Dr. Tham, I would like you to highlight on three high-profile suicide cases in Singapore during the era of Lee Kuan Yew. Now, the first one is the suicide of Mrs. Lee Kuan Yew. The second one is the suicide of the Home Affairs Minister Wong Lincoln, who hanged himself. And then the third one is the Minister for Housing, who shot himself in the head. Can you please highlight this?
Oh, hold on. You're saying, did you start with the suicide of Mrs. Lee Kuan Yew?
Yeah, his first wife. Mrs. Lee Hsien Loong,
Mrs. Lee Hsien Loong.
Mrs. Lee Hsien Loong.
Oh, okay. Well,
Thanks, Robert.
Yeah, these are very interesting questions, but I think they're a bit after my period. You see, the problem is there's not a lot of information after 1963 when Singapore is no longer a British colony. So I'm afraid I really can't comment on those because they're after my era expertise, and hopefully one day, you know, the truth will be revealed, but I don't really know.
If I could pick you up on that phrase, British colony, we spoke to Professor Emeritus Koo Kee Kim recently on the show, and in it we discussed some of his recent comments that stated that Malaysia, essentially, or Malaya, was never a British colony, you know, and it kind of got picked apart in certain quarters, and I'm curious what your opinion is.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that to say that Malaya is not a British colony is quite ridiculous. You know, if you look at it really, really strictly in the sense of a formal government apparatus and structure, right, then okay, yes. But that is, you know, such nitpicking, that is such a marginal case to, you know, such a narrow, narrow definition, right, that in reality, it is all but meaningless. Did the British get what they want out of Malaya? Did they reshape Malaya to their satisfaction? Did they alter the structure and shape of the Malayan economy, culture, society? Yes, they did all those things. They de facto, you know, if not de jure, ruled Malaya for a long, long time and continued to exert influence even after formal independence. So it's foolish to say that we were not a colony.
Could it be said that historians generally do get to engage in these sorts of selective semantics, though? You know, one man's colony is another man's. Well, that's not right.
Yeah, I think there is some of that. You know, how you define terms is really, really important. How you, it shapes how you look at things. So there is a certain amount of semantics, but it is not very helpful, right? You want to argue about the substance, not about, you know, what do you mean by this word or that word? So most historians would engage with Malaysia on this level of, yes, the British got to do what they wanted to do, they ran the show, and therefore they're a colony, instead of arguing over the definition of a colony. So, yeah.
We have a call now from Joyce. Good afternoon, Joyce.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, your question?
Hi. Throughout the series, I realized that, you know, you seem to be a bit critical about Lee Kuan Yew. Like, is there going to be, like, any legal actions taken against you or any, like, repercussion on your take on Lee Kuan Yew?
Thanks for that, Joyce.
Well, actually, there already has been. I mean, I used to work for the National University of Singapore. And as my contract was coming to an end, I was told that because of my work, I was no longer welcome. I could no longer be employed at the university. Now, of course, all this was done informally, face-to-face meetings, phone calls, so there's no paper trail. So, you know, of course, I can't prove that I am blacklisted. But I have had enough of a reception, enough of feedback from the powers that be to have made very clear their displeasure. With regards to legal action, I don't think so, specifically legal action, because everything I do is cited. I have plenty of evidence. I have stacks and stacks of evidence. You know, I'm an academic. You know, I don't just make arguments out of thin air. So legal action would be quite silly. Of course, you know, I'm not the powers that be in Singapore. I don't know what they would decide to do. But I think given how much I cite my work and how much evidence I have, that would be, you know, that would be a foolish course of action. But most of all, I mean, you can't libel a dead man, you know. So I don't know what basis, you can't slander or libel a dead man. So I don't know what basis they'd sue me on.
Have you received that kind of feedback from Singaporeans of surprise about, you know, someone who amounts to a national hero?
Oh, yes, yes. But I don't know if surprise is the right word. Because for all Lee Kuan Yew's great achievements, and he had very great achievements, he was a very smart man, his character was not a surprise to people. Indeed, it was celebrated as part of what made him so good, so effective, so brilliant.
Brass knuckles.
Yes. Yeah. So to know that he did things like this, that he enabled so much oppression, even of those closest to him, that he stabbed so many people in the back, people aren't surprised, I think. The more surprising parts actually were where the bits where Lee Kuan Yew acted with great cowardice, you know, and that I think people actually had a lot more surprise at, because the myth that's built up around him shows him, you know, to be brave and uncompromising, but that wasn't the case in the 50s and 60s.
We have 5 more minutes left. If you would like to ask any questions, give any opinions, the time to call is now. That number is 03-77-109-000. You can also text 01-62-01-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've also actually been live on Facebook, and I forgot to mention that, but you can check us out there as well.
On my website, The History of Singapore, if you go to facebook.com/historysg, that's where we're live.
Briefly, some feedback that's come in via text. Somebody says, History of Singapore is the best program ever. The truth unveiled and revealed. So there you go.
Well, thank you very much. Very kind of you.
And via tweet, Faiz Azmi said, hindsight's 2020. If Lee Kuan Yew stayed, who knows if he would still be alive or free, or even if he would have won all those seats in Singapore.
Yes, absolutely. And that's part of the point I was trying to make, because, you know, so many Malaysians keep saying to me, if only Lee Kuan Yew had stayed on in Malaysia, if only there hadn't been separation. But it's the exact same point that our friend here is making. Hindsight is 2020, so we really don't know what would have happened.
Is there a temptation always to rewrite history, especially when it comes to building of both heroes and villains?
Well, I mean, when you have new evidence, you have to rewrite history, right? And a lot of what my work is based on is new evidence that arose out of declassification by the British. But I think what you're more getting at is the reinterpretation of history. And we have to understand, see, it comes from a common misconception about history that it's just a narrative, that it's, you know, as someone said, one damn fact after another. History isn't a narrative, it's arguments. History is an argument, one or more arguments. It's arguments about our past that help us better understand the past, and therefore help us better understand the present and help us lead better lives in the future. So history is not meant to be static. It's always meant to be reinterpreted in light of new experience, new understanding. I mean, for example, without histories that have brought in the perspectives of women, minorities, or the discriminated, we would not be able to understand their experience and then take that and help us address those problems that we have in our society. So history must be argued over in order for us to better understand. You know, so there is no such thing as settled history or any sort of, facts.
Untouchable
history. Untouchable, factual, objective history. All history is subjective, and all history must be argued over, because the process of arguing helps us become better.
And is that just a process that happens with historians? Because I'm assuming that part of the reason for doing this show is to reach out beyond just that community of people who have been having these arguments, you know, for some decades now.
Yes, yes, absolutely. You know, I think it's really important for us to be always self-aware and self-reflective. And you can't really do that as a person if you don't have a good awareness of your history. So my series, I also tried to talk about, I tried to help people get historical skills, right? And help them develop ways of thinking about their own past as it relates to the history of Singapore and Malaysia.
We have a phone call from Rama. Good afternoon, Rama.
Hi, good afternoon. Being of ex-military here and having a good buddy who is across the causeway when the separation took place, I just wanted to ask you a question. Did you do a study of how the armed forces were split at that point of separation? Was there some terminal discussions, some form of a principle of division of troops and that sort of thing?
Oh, thank you, Rama.
That's an interesting question. No, I haven't done those. Those are very technical questions, and there are military historians who have done work on that. So I'd urge you to check out their work. I think Miksic and Farrell, and there's a really good volume on the history of military history of Singapore. That might be a starting point for you to check out the military history of Singapore, and from there you could probably find other readings that would help address your question.
Okay, we have a minute left, more or less, okay. And I thought we could use the minute. You mentioned, I mean, you had a message at the end of the episode, which I guess is a nice closer, but for the purposes of this interview, what were you hoping people would take away from it? What kinds of conversations are you hoping will continue after people have listened to the series?
Well, I think I would really hope that people understand several things. One is that, you know, as I mentioned, the arbitrariness of our borders, of our identity, that things don't have to be the way they are, that a lot of how we have turned out is a historical accident. But that also means that how we are today does not have to be how we are in the future. And as a citizen, you know, as a resident, as a Malaysian or a Singaporean, you have the right also to fight for the future that you want to see, just as our ancestors, our forefathers fought for a free and democratic Singapore and Malaysia, so too can you do it. So I really hope that people get a broader understanding of time, of causality, of power, and then they can take that and help them and help us really make our countries better.
Thank you very much for coming in live in the studio.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
I'm Ms. Viking today with PJ Tham, Research Associate at the Centre for Global History at the University of Oxford. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.